This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 169. Can a comic collector of 20 plus years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
The JLA splits up again. Bruce and Karen take their final bows. Radioactivity, 90s style, and more Flashpoint Roundup. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, August 21st, 2011. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just as a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the podcast feed, other SF podcasts, and blogs. You can subscribe via iTunes, where we'd really appreciate it if you'd leave us a review.
And you can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Mark?
Yes?
It's August.
It's August, and it's 2 weeks away from the big event.
Yes.
Which means a lot of final issues.
Ooh. It was kind of sad this week.
Yeah, it is. I think so.
I think it was...
bittersweet.
Exactly.
Yeah. Starting with Justice League of America, number 60, by Robinson and Sam Peer. So the current team breaks up, and that's basically most of what the issue is about, each giving their reasons why they're leaving the group. And James Robinson teases us with what might have been, had he been allowed to continue doing the title, a character named the Construct, which is a Silver Age JSA villain. It's a computer thing that can take over other computer consciousness and all this. And the Construct was going to take over all the robots in the DCU. The Metal Men and Robot Man.
And the Red Tornado.
Red Tornadoes, and... yeah. Jesse Quick, apparently pregnant.
Well, and I think that we knew that, or at least suspected it.
We suspected it.
Because when they had that dual storyline.
In JSA.
Where they were with that other couple,
right.
And the woman was pregnant.
Right.
And everything. I think that was back to that.
Right.
But she was very pregnant,
yeah.
Here.
Spandex,
you don't often see.
Spandex not flattering to.
Yes, and that's why I think the pregnant superheroes tend to take leaves of absence.
Yeah. We're going to see the Saturn-Thanagar War.
Well, I'm glad we didn't see that. I'm tired of Thanagar Wars.
And the Battle for Gem World. There used to be a whole Amicus series back in the 70s. And it's a continuity that's one of those questions when they reorganize things like, well, what happened to Gem World?
Do you have that series?
No.
Oh, okay.
The 70s series. I do wish we were given the chance to actually read these stories.
Some of them.
Well.
Not the Thanagar story.
I would have been fine with reading the
I know, you like
War.
Those, but. Yeah, I thought it was really interesting to see where they could have taken it. And also kind of thinking, wow, they're not keeping these in reserve either, you know, in case they need more stories later.
Well, I think some of the writers have made it pretty clear through their writing in the comics that they're not happy with this. And James Robinson is clearly one of them. But by the fact that he came out with all this information, it's like, yeah, well, you could add all this, but no, forget it.
Yeah.
Guess you won't see these. Batman number 713 by Nikiza. Scott, Sam Peer, and Brezen. By the way, you can check out the next Batman 713 in the year 2070. It's a one-issue history of the current Batman character, really. And the special guest is Pack Rat Comics, our comic book dealer in Hilliard, Ohio, which apparently has a location next door to the Wayne Foundation.
In Gotham.
In Gotham. We
had
no idea.
I want to get my pull list there.
Yeah. How do I work that out?
That's pretty cool, but yeah, if you look at
check with Jamie on that. How's that work?
It's in the top panel.
Right.
And you see the Wayne Foundation with Pack Rat Comics right next to it. Their logo's there and everything. It is so neat.
It is. So
otherwise, I didn't really think much of the story.
Yeah, the rest of the issue was just retrospective of the character. It was all it really was.
Yeah.
Power Girl number 27 by Sturgis and Presetia.
Weep, weep,
yeah.
Weep.
We actually thought the last issue was the last issue, but they got another one in. The story is a big rescue in 60 seconds. It's very cool how she's able to save all these people.
It's a very classic rescue plot line.
Right.
You have three people in danger, and you have to pick the only one you can save.
Right. And she says, no, I'll just save all three of them. And it's really great writing by Matt Sturgis.
And we got to see
Cyclone.
Cyclone, yeah.
Another character that who knows if and when the JSA comes back, if Cyclone will ever be seen again.
And I loved her also.
Yeah. So, farewell, Karen Starr. Maybe we'll see you in Multiversity next year, we hope.
Oh, I hope so.
I hope so.
I loved this comic.
Mm-hmm.
It grew on me.
Yeah.
It really did.
Yeah. And when the first creative team left, I was like, okay, well, that's going to be the end of it. But the new creative teams really made the title work. It was certainly a different direction than what we saw in the first several issues, but still a very good title. All right. Let's get retroactive.
Woohoo! I don't think of any mod 90s music.
Well, I have some.
Okay.
Which is playing right now. And it's starting with Wonder Woman Retroactive, the 90s by Messner, Loebs, and Motor, and Messner, Loebs, and Collins. Both of these were very much 1990s Wonder Woman stories. There's a lot more dialogue than battling. It's a lot about female empowerment. And frankly, I think it's what the Wonder Woman title should be.
I agree. I love the first story with the group of girls that she's leading.
Right.
And she just was asked to step in and like babysit for them, basically.
Right. And then she ends up turning them pretty much into Amazons. I mean, you know, the idea that these are spoiled girls. She's asking these girls, what does your group do? And, well, we listen to music and shop and
read magazines.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then she sort of almost bullies them into getting some exercise and doing stuff. But then they learn to love it, of course.
Exactly.
And they rescue the boys.
Yeah.
I loved that story. I really, really did.
And the reprint is the beginning of Diana's space odyssey. There was probably at least a year in the 90s where Diana was off in space.
And you probably have those.
I have those. Almost certainly I have those.
I think maybe that's going to be my first retro comics read
then.
Because I was a little disappointed that it ended without knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah. I can't say I loved the art in the reprint story. It's kind of stylized. I certainly like the art in the newer story better.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, this type of storyline is probably not what you're going to see in the new DCU, I'm guessing. It's going to be a lot more, even more action,
yeah.
Which is a shame, frankly. I mean, I understand. She's a superhero. There's got to be battles. That's fine. But it can't just be constant battling and battling. Otherwise, it could be any other generic character. What's
constantly
the difference?
Constantly battling and constantly questioning the, you know, mythos or whatever.
Right. And then we have Batman Retroactive, the 1990s by Grant and Breyfogle and Grant and Breyfogle. Apart from the color palette, the stories could pretty much be twins. Both of them could have been reprints, except one is a new story.
Uh-huh.
But they're very much similar stories, very much told in the same way, which makes sense because it's the same creative team for both. And both of them are more like character studies, and Batman is almost in the background. The real storyline is about this just regular character, normal civilian. One is a
cab driver, reformed cab driver.
Right. And the other one is a garbage man.
Yes.
But again, very similar stories. And of course, again, the new art is better than the reprint, which there's more opportunities now in art. I mean, it's really not fair to judge them. Certainly, palettes are much, much wider now that they're doing everything by computer. And they can, I feel like they can be much more creative, not only in the palette, but also in the actual inking. Because, you know, okay, I didn't like that. Okay, I'll just go undo and redo it again.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than I have to erase it.
Or
so they can really refine things a lot more than they used to.
Yes, that makes sense.
So, DC, how about retroactives 1940s, 50s, and 60s? That would be nice. Or maybe just reprints that aren't in hardcover and cost $60. You know, like the same ones I was able to pick up in the 1970s under Super Spectaculars that were 50 cents. That would be nice.
Yeah, well, you're not going to see 50 cents
again.
No, I'm not.
I'll be happy to pay $2.50 or even $5 for a 100-page Super Spectacular of reprints. That would be nice. Moving on to the old Flashpoint Roundup. And we start with Outsider 3 of 3 by Robinson and Fernandez. So we get to learn how John Johns fared in the Flashpoint universe. Didn't go well. So the Outsider caught him, and he sold him to the Russians who wanted their own superhero. And he ends up in, like, this gulag. And he's back now, and so the big fight is on. And Outsider uses Professor Ertl's transporter, the transporter that brought John Johns, the Martian Manhunter, to Earth in the first place, accidentally.
Right.
And he catches Johns between two dimensions. So half of them's in one dimension, one's in the other, which means Outsider actually knows about the 52 universes. He's learned that. And he just basically tears him in half. And in the end, he's off to fight in the final battle, which, of course, is going to be Flashpoint number 5. We never really learn a lot more about the Outsider at all. And I really do think that James Robinson had this stock character available before Flashpoint was even a concept.
Like, maybe he had thought of him.
Right.
And maybe just even pitched him, but
and didn't go anywhere.
Sell him.
Right,
yeah.
Couldn't go anywhere. I'm convinced that's the case. Because, again, we didn't learn much about him. He was more just like, almost like a narrator giving you backstory into the Flashpoint universe.
But he certainly seemed like a fully fleshed, so to speak, character.
Yeah, as it was. Yeah. Yeah, he definitely was a good character. I'm surprised that DC didn't try to use him elsewhere before this. And maybe we'll see him again back in the new DCU. Abin Sur, the Green Lantern number 3 of 3 by Schlagman, Rocha, and Messifera. So we left Abin Sur with his ring hand cut off by Sinestro. And Abin creates a new hand with the ring and stops Sinestro.
I think we've talked about it before, but lots of DC characters seem to lose hands.
Yes. Aquaman, yeah, absolutely. Arsenal, just off the top of my head, I can think of two.
Weird.
It happens a lot. So the Guardians still want Abin Sur to get the white entity and leave Earth, but he wants to fight for Earth first. So they shut his ring off from the main power battery, but conveniently he still has some power left, which I'm like, if they're punishing him, why don't they just shut off the ring? But they didn't, because the storyline had to move forward. So he still has some power left, and he goes into the final battle. Again, Flashpoint 5. And he's killed, but then in the end becomes the White Lantern. So he merges with the white entity. And so now Abin Sur, the White Lantern, will be fighting in Flashpoint 5, presumably.
Okay, so I guess it's fine that they're incorporating stuff from previous events into this, because mm-hmm. I always complain that they forget about the previous events.
Right.
But I would have been happy to see the end of the other Colored Lanterns.
No, you're going to see them. And they've made it very clear that whole concept is going to transfer into the new DCU.
Okay.
The Crayola Lanterns will continue. Wonder Woman and the Furies, number 3 of 3 by Abnett, Lanning, and Padilla. So Terra literally raises the UK in order to save it, takes the entire landmass and raises it like a mile in the air so that it doesn't get flooded. And Diana learns the truth that Orm and Penthesilea, this, as far as I can tell, random Amazon woman, are lovers.
Wasn't it her, like, aunt or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, I didn't quite understand.
Well, they're
like
all her
some,
aunts.
Yeah,
but
yeah, exactly. So these two were the masterminds of the whole thing that caused the war. And they plan to take over as the proper warriors because they both are unhappy that Arthur and Diana are trying to actually broker a peace treaty. They don't want that. And she also learns about the re-education camps that are going on, the experiments trying to turn regular human females into Amazons. And so now she's off to the final battle. So everything's going to tie together in Flashpoint 5, which comes out in 2 weeks, which is the same day that Justice League number one comes out. And as far as I know, that's the only two titles from DC, at least DC proper, that are coming out that week.
What are we going to talk about?
I don't know. It'll be prediction week as to what's going to happen, I guess.
Maybe that'll be our all independence week.
Yeah, exactly. So, before we get out, oh, nope, we're not going to get out of here. We are going to get out of here.
But we're not going to play who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly, because last week was a special double issue.
Damn you, double issues!
If you'd like, we could play again with last week's. You probably still don't remember.
I still won't remember.
I won't make you, because it was a stupid Twilight cover.
Well, yeah. Well, that's always... always a good guess. If in doubt, Twilight.
Yeah.
All right. Want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, and you can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.